Dear friends, it is good to be together again and proceed with our study. During our last meeting, we started the second part of the book of Revelation. It was about a judgment, about a sealed book with seven seals, which will be unsealed gradually. May I recall some ideas that came out of our last meeting? Remember, there was a loud voice sounding like a trumpet calling John and saying, "Come, I shall show you things that will happen afterwards." And John sees a door open in heaven. He changes place from the apartment where he was before with Jesus and the seven golden lampstands and moves in the most holy place of this same sanctuary. So doing, he goes from the daily service, Jesus with his church every day, to the annual service, which corresponds to the judgment. In fact, his entering in this particular place corresponds to the great day of atonement. On that day, those who humble their souls, that is, those who recognize their sins, who acknowledge their real state, will be saved. Whereas the others, who will not humble their soul, will be cast out from the multitude of God's people. It is therefore a day of judgment. So, let's meet on this day of judgment. We enter in the seat room, which room we saw was not occupied by God alone. Around God's throne were 24 thrones with 24 elders, those in charge of the church. And around still and above, four living creatures. These living creatures we encountered in the book of Ezekiel. They had a man's face, the face of an ox, that of a lion, the face of an eagle. They had by their sides large, enormous wheels, which went practically from earth to heaven, with eyes all around. And when these wheels move very fast, they would seem like a flash running from heaven to earth, and from earth to heaven, indicating a permanent communication between heaven and earth. This is obviously indispensable for the judgment. So, this text of chapter 4 ended with the 24 elders and the four living creatures' recognition of God's dignity. Considering this assembly as a justice court, those sitting there considered themselves competent for the duty they had to perform, that is, judgment to pronounce. May I propose that we now proceed by reading chapter 5 and see how this scene goes on. And I saw in the right hand of him who sat on the throne a scroll written inside and on the back, sealed with seven seals. Then I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, "Who is worthy to open the scroll and to loose the seals?" And no one in heaven or on earth or under the earth was able to open the scroll or to look at it. So I wept much, because no one was found worthy to open and read the scroll and to look at it. But one of the elders said to me, Do not weep. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has prevailed to open the scroll and to loose its seven seals. And I looked, and behold, in the midst of the throne and of the four living creatures, and in the midst of the elders, stood a lamb as though it had been slain, and having seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into the earth. Then he came and took the scroll out of the right hand of him who sat on the throne. Now, when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each having a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sang a new song, saying, "You are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain and have redeemed us to God by your blood, out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation, and have made us kings and priests to our God, and we shall reign on the earth." Then I looked, and I heard the voice of many angels around the throne, the living creatures and the elders, and the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000 and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. And every creature which is in heaven and on the earth and under the earth, and such as are in the sea, and all that are in them, I heard saying, blessing and honor and glory and power be to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb forever and ever." Then the four living creatures said, "Amen." And the 24 elders fell down and worshipped him who lives forever and ever. At first sight, we can gather many amazing information to which we are not usually accustomed. Let us reflect upon the characters around in this scene. We have the Father, then the 24 elders, the four living creatures. After that, we have the Lamb coming up, and then thousands, 10,000s of angels. And at last, all the creatures who dwell on the earth, under the earth, on the sea, and under the sea, everywhere. In short, we have a general assembly in heaven. Even though we are not accustomed to these things, we can say that there are many other texts in the Bible ascertaining that God does not rule as an absolute despot, cutting, deciding, slicing, but he shares his decisions with the entire heaven. Let me make it clear that there is something really important about God's character that we must understand. The following scene that we are about to see will reveal these traits. We shall see this as the scene progresses. Let us consider the reason of this general assembly. Because if there is a general assembly, this means important event. It is the opening of the book. Among the things that we shall try to understand as quickly as possible is the nature of this book. So, let's go back to the ongoing of this scene and the first verses of this fifth chapter. "And I saw in the right hand of him who sat on the throne a scroll written inside and on the back, sealed with seven seals." A book. Which book is that? For this, we shall have to go down to chapter 13 in order to understand the nature of this book. So, in chapter 13, verse 8, we read the following. "All who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world." This is quite an interesting passage, since it talks about the slain Lamb. It is the only passage, together with chapter 5, that talks about the slain Lamb. It also indicates that there is a book called the Book of Life of the Slain Lamb. Therefore, it refers to the book that the slain Lamb receives in chapter 5. But an important detail, he calls it the Book of Life. What is somewhat more troubling in this verse we have just read is that this book has been written at the very foundation of the world, meaning that it has been written before each one of us existed. By this, God shows that He knew beforehand what would be the destiny of each one of us. Does this teach something about predestination? Does it mean that the fate of everyone is already cast, and this at the very foundation of the world? We shall analyze this question later, in our next meeting, when we shall talk about the double documents. But meanwhile, I can give you some information without today solving the problem entirely. A second precious text helping us to have a clearer understanding about the book lies in the 17th chapter of Revelation, and I read verse 8. The beast that you saw was and is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition, and those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world. When they see the beast, I retain simply that which has to do with the book of life, written even before the foundation of the world. We can note that there are several texts concerning the book of life, and one can imagine the book of life as being a list of names. Evidently, if everything is already written, how can there be the least change? Let us look at some of these verses. The book of Exodus, the second of the Bible, written by Moses the prophet in chapter 32, verses 32 and 33, reveals something about this book. In the context, Moses is tired. Tired of all the problems caused by the disobedient people, says, "Yet now, if you will forgive their sin, but if not, I pray, blot me out of your book, which you have written." And the Lord said to Moses, "Whoever has sinned against me, I will blot out of my book." So, consequently, this text establishes that there is a book of life with names written in, which names can be erased from it. King David, also speaking about this book and his enemies in Psalm 69, verse 28, says, "Let them be blotted out of the book of the living, and not be written with the righteous." In the book of Daniel the prophet, at the end of his writings in chapter 12, verse 1, we have the following information. "At that time Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the son of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book." The New Testament also speaks about this book. I'll quote two texts. One from Apostle Paul in his letter to the Philippians, chapter 4, verse 3. "And I urge you also, true companion, help these women who labored with me in the gospel, with Clement also, and the rest of my fellow workers, whose name are in the book of life." And at last, in the book of Revelation, in the letter addressed to Sardis, perhaps we have not sufficiently underlined it, chapter 3, verse 5, we read, "He who overcomes shall be clothed in white garments, and I will not blot out his name from the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels." We must now see what will become of this book. First, it appears in the hand of one sitting on the throne, the Father. This scene could have been disclosed very simply. He could just give the document to the Son. We know, and Jesus himself said, "For the Father judges no one, but has committed all judgment to the Son." In a certain way, he could have committed judgment unto Jesus by giving him the book, but this does not happen this way. It is an angel who shouts to everyone, that is the whole celestial society, saying, Revelation 5:2, "Who is worthy to open the scroll and to loose its seals?" Silence. They looked at one another. Nobody judges himself worthy to open the book. John is extremely worried, and he weeps. Why does he weep? Because if nobody can open this book, it means that no one will be saved. Then, at that moment, one of the elders turns towards John and says, "Do not weep. The lion of the tribe of Judah, the seed, has prevailed to open the book and these seven seals." And now John is surely relieved. He looks forward to see a lion, or the root of Judah, or the root of David. We shall try to understand what light these terms can bring to us. In order to understand the Lion of Judah, we must go to the book of Genesis. In this book, when Jacob bestows his blessings to his 12 sons, he stops upon Judah and uttered these prophetic words. Genesis 49, verse 9. "Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He bows down, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who shall rouse him?" This text is recorded in Genesis 49:9. Judah is compared unto a lion. But Jesus is from the root of Judah, without being the firstborn. It is he who received the scepter, that is, it is he who will have the authority. King David comes down from the lineage of Judah. But Jesus himself is from the root of David. This interesting text can be read in the book of the prophet Isaiah, chapter 11, from the first verse and on. Isaiah 11:1. "There shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, a branch shall grow out of his root. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord." This is quite an interesting text, because the branch growing out of the root of Jesse is no one else than the father of David. And a branch growing out of the branch of Jesse is of course a root of David. And so, this concerns Jesus. The text, the Revelation text, reveals that the root of Jesse is no one else but Jesus himself. A second interesting thing brought forward in this text is that the Spirit is quoted seven times. Let's look at this. Isaiah chapter 1 verses 1 and 2. "The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and Spirit of understanding, the Spirit of counsel, Spirit of might, the Spirit of knowledge, Spirit of the fear of the Lord." 7. Digging a little further in the text, what do we see? We see that a slain lamb has seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God. And these seven spirits of God obviously refer to the text of Isaiah 2. It is, of course, the fullness of the Spirit. But one understands that there is need of all this to judge, and that's what the text tells us. Isaiah 11, verses 3 to 5, His delight is in the fear of the Lord, and he shall not judge by the sight of his eyes, nor decide by the hearing of his ears, but with righteousness he shall judge the poor, and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. He shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall slay the wicked. Righteousness shall be the belt of his loins, and faithfulness the belt of his waist. Don't you want to be judged by such a judge who is inspired with such a spirit, with such a consideration for man, who sees everything? This is what represents the eyes in the vision. He has the fullness of the Spirit. He makes the difference between the evil and the one who acts righteously, with justice, who at least seeks him eagerly, with all his heart. So, we see here the character who will be the solution of the problem. He is the one able to open the book. Now that everyone knows he is able to open the book, he will be considered by everyone with dignity. Let us examine what the text has to tell us and see how things will turn out. And I looked, and behold, in the midst of the throne of the four living creatures, and in the midst of the elders, stood a lamb as though it had been slain, having seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God. I now have to tell you about the seven horns. For a Hebrew, a horn is the synonym of power. David, the psalmist, wishing to express his gratitude to God, says, God is my horn, meaning God is my strength. Very often, the sentence is translated, God is my strength, and one can understand it. But the original text says, God is my horn, and we know that all the strength of an animal resides in its horn. The animal has seven horns. It is omnipotent. See, it has a characteristic attributed to the lamb, that is, to Jesus. But it is indeed a particular lamb. It is in fact a symbolic lamb, which shows us that this lamb is Jesus. The second point which I would like to consider with you is, what is this strength? One would expect to see a lion, and you understand John's surprise. A lion is announced, the Lion of Judah, and what does he see? A slain lamb. If you would like to take a shortcut, we could perhaps think that it is the lion which slew the lamb. Not at all. It is the same character. But how can this be possible? It's because of Christ's victory. That makes him a lion. He can defend us. He can deliver us through his death on the cross. One could think that Christ at his death has lost the battle. But on the contrary, his dying on the cross is the sign that he has in fact won the battle for good. How's that? It's because though tempted, he resisted the enemy up to the end. Satan tried everything to call his downfall, yet he resisted through blood and tears until death. At the very moment he expired, the enemy was vanquished. We shall have the opportunity to look through this later. The real victory at the cross is that of the Lamb, the slain Lamb. Because he was slain, he can judge and save us to the utmost.